practice empathy in our work, but we forget that as we lead teams and lead resources and lead initiatives, empathy is the single most fundamental thing that helps us and makes us effective.
Hi everyone, thanks for tuning into Notes of Design. To help support our mission spread knowledge, we have a very special guest in today's episode. Let's welcome Gloria, an industry agnostic senior business executive with over 16 years of extensive experience driving business strategy with insights. She has successfully led UX and consumer insights and analytic teams, providing the right research data, insights, and opportunities to various leaders. Throughout her career, Gloria has built, led, and scaled research and insight teams consisting of researchers, analysts, operation managers, and UX insight experts, and she has driven strategy at renowned global companies including Fortune 100 organizations, public sector entities, as well as startups. Currently serving as the head of global product experience research at Gusto, Gloria is responsible for setting and executing a compelling vision and strategy for consumer and user insights. Her team delivers insights and consumer empathy programs which de-risks and drive the design and build of best-in-class payroll and HR solutions for small and medium-sized companies. Prior to this role, Gloria also held leadership positions in global research teams across various industries such as SaaS, education, finance, and public sectors. In this episode, Leadership in UX Research, Gloria shares her journey into the field of UX research and design. She discusses how she got started and provides valuable advice for those aspiring in leadership role. Gloria also spoke about having a strong UX research leadership, highlighting key principles like fostering collaboration, managing diverse perspectives, and building high-performing teams. She also spoke about her decision-making process for major research initiatives and strategies for upholding diversity and inclusion, and she also touches on balancing business objectives with user needs. Then we discuss where she sees UX research heading with rise of AI. We then concluded the show by a glimpse into day of Gloria as a research leader, and also she had shared wonderful recommendations of books and also people who inspired her the most in the space. Hi, everyone. Thanks for tuning into Notes of Design. In this episode, we have a very special guest with us. Hi, Gloria. Welcome to Notes of Design.
Hi, Tej. Thank you so much for inviting me. I am a listener to this podcast, and I am very excited to be part of the show.
Thank you so much, Gloria. So how was your day so far?
My day has been great. Really, really good. Wrapping up, for the holidays. And so it's just a few meetings here and there, but I am really, really thankful for a good start of the morning. It's really great.
That's really wonderful, Gloria. So if you could give a brief about yourself to our listeners out there.
How would I intro myself? My name is Gloria Osardi. I am a researcher by training, but the last 10 to 12 years, I have been leading and scaling research teams. My love or passion is to help build innovative technology for all, which means that my role, my small role in building inclusive, equitable research teams really go a long way to helping companies and tech innovation really speak to a holistic pool of users, really for everyone. So that's who I am, leading research teams, but also a researcher by training and by practice.
Thank you so much, Gloria. So what was your journey into design and research? How did you start? And what are your tips to the beginners on starting their journey?
Yeah, my journey into UX research has been convoluted, to say the least. I started off as a software engineer, really learning how to build code. And as I was going through the process of writing your pseudocode, your algorithm, building the technology, seeing what your code does on the screen, I stumbled upon this realization that, okay, I needed to know who was going to be in the room, who was going to know the code, who was going to use the code. And so I started to build a long document called user manual, how to start to run it and all that. Little did I know that that was the way to think as a researcher, to think as someone who builds technology. But fast forward, started to really enjoy building code until I started becoming curious about other industries. So back then, technology was being used heavily by entertainment, media, internet companies. But when you look at other industries such as banking or healthcare, agriculture, education, we weren't really utilizing technology in the ways that could bring a lot of good, but also to make our lives easier. And so my curiosity led me to really do extensive research into where other industries are and how they can really leverage what technology has to offer. That led me into healthcare, did applied health informatics at Hopkins, and started to really understand that thinking about technology itself has to do a lot with like researching the people using it and also augmenting the people building the technology in terms of like, what do they need? How do they think about what they're building? And then I started doing healthcare informatics, you know, patient safety, medical error testing, and building like medical devices, organization of like medical systems to really help with care. And then I practiced both industry and academic labs as a researcher, did a lot of PhD internships as I was also learning how to really understand human brain and human behavior. So think of cognition, psychology, design thinking, all of that. When I came out from grad school, I'd been practicing whilst getting my degree, but basically I landed in federal government contracting as a researcher and then leading teams and then Capital One leading teams and then Amazon. And I'm now at Gusto leading research and insights across the company. And for those who are curious, Gusto is a small business that builds payroll and HR tools and functionality for small and medium-sized businesses. So my journey has been starting from like research, doing the work, and then leading teams, and now focusing heavily on building and scaling for effective insights across companies.
Thank you so much, Claudia. So let's begin our episode today in leadership in UX research. So how do you define leadership in context of UX research, and what leadership principles do you consider most vital for success in this role in research?
Yes, when I think about leadership in the context of UX research, I honestly feel like all levels of researchers have a little bit, and it can be a little bit to as much as like what the company culture is of leadership in the job description. We see a lot of researchers partnering with stakeholders who are way above in kind of like the traditional company leveling. We see a lot of research managers having to partner with stakeholders who are director, VP level. And then it goes on and on to, you know, director of research partnering with VP level C-suite. It goes without saying that as a researcher, from even doing a particular project or, you know, researching a particular question, you tend to embody some of these leadership behavior in the way that you frame, the way that you gather or garner alignment on the problem questions, the way that you bring people along your journey to doing the research, and the way that you ensure that your insights are being used by the company. And so when I think about research leadership, I do not really separate my audience. I'm talking to researchers, to folks who are actually leading insights and research in organization. Some of the principles that have really worked for me that I encourage research leaders or people in management role to think about starts with our good old empathy. Practice empathy in our work, but we forget that as we lead teams and lead resources and lead initiatives, empathy is the single most fundamental thing that helps us and makes us effective. And what do I mean by that? I mean that having empathy on your customers for the business, having empathy for your business leaders for what you're trying to do, as you are trying to get customer insights into the organization, having empathy on your stakeholders in different business functions and understanding their fears, frustration, anxiety, hopes in what they want to do, whether it's the head of engineering or design manager or CX project manager, having empathy for where they are, the spaces that they fit, how that relates to you as a researcher, research manager, or research executive, helps you really start to think deeply about what you bring and what your teams bring. So I always start with empathy and saying like, what is the culture of the company? What is the culture of my teams? We work closely with design. How am I being empathetic to the designers that partner with my researchers? How am I being empathetic to, you know, my manager who runs design, or my stakeholders who run product engineering, marketing. And that, I think, for research leaders, helps us in starting to understand that the world is bigger than our space, but it helps us also lean into that vulnerability of saying, I want to learn more. I want to know all the factors that are not spoken, that are not written, that are not evident, that helps me thrive, but helps me and my team become better for the company. And I also really think about like mastering the craft and mastering yourself. And research leaders, we have this dual goal of like making sure that our researchers are executing at a high level. They're excellent at the craft. They are infusing all these milestones and processes that make research great. But you're also being great at the soft skills, building and nurturing trusting relationship, learning about all the different insights that are happening and translating them, helping others scale the work, you know, with the 80% of the stuff that really does not move the needle. For research leaders, we can leave those work behind. And so really building that muscle of saying, how do I skill others to do some of the work that I can't quite get to, or my team can't quite get to? Some of these things are the principles that helps you in framing your mindset. And then when you think about the principles that gets you to be successful in your role, I think that the first principle is like, you know, thinking of yourself as the firefighter, but the cheerleader. As research leaders, we have kind of a 360 view. We're usually like in the middle, trying to figure out what other functions want to do, where the business is going, pulling our teams to really focus on what is truly important so that we can direct decisions that the company is making. It forces us to really think about, one, if we're delivering insights, are they the best? Are they done rigorously? But then if we are seeing that our teams are going through problems or things are not getting done or folks are not aligning, it impacts our work. It impacts our team. So being the cheerleader or being a firefighter means that, one, you are showing a vision that nobody has seen, or a vision that requires collaboration. But then on day to day or week to week, you're also putting out fires in terms of like helping your teammates fit into organizations and partner, helping, you know, design, engineering, figure out the balance and the trade-offs. And then I also say that it requires, like, what makes you really successful is also understanding that you're facilitating other people's goals. And that is, I think, you know, the biggest lesson for research leaders is to be okay with facilitating other people's goals. I usually tell my mentees and other leaders that I coach that two things. One, you have to always think about the business goals. Save cost or save money, reduce cost, optimize the processes that are going on, really infuse customer insights to the company. But you're also thinking about design goals and the customer experience goals. And so that could also lead to CX or customer support goals. And to be fully comfortable and confident in that, and knowing that anytime you're measuring your impact, it's okay to have that ladder into other people's goals and how you supported those goals. It really sets you up for success. It sets your team up for success and it gives you a better understanding of how to frame the value or the return on investment from a company-wide perspective or a design customer experience perspective. So those are some of the principles or some of the things that I have garnered to really help leaders, research leaders, be successful in their role and lead successful teams.
Thank you so much, Claudia. So how do you foster collaboration and creativity within your UX research team? What strategies do you use to manage the diverse skill set and perspectives of multiple people in the team?
Yeah, fostering collaboration. I start with my team, set the expectation, and I embody what I'm saying through my expectation, in the sense that I want my team to belong. I want my team to feel like a team. And building a team that sticks takes time, takes effort, takes intentionality. So for me, how I foster collaboration, even before I move to collaboration with your stakeholders or your partners, I make sure that I'm building the mechanism. I'm taking time, being intentional, I'm building the mechanisms and the programs and the activities that helps my team stick. So the team meetings, the fun fairs, the critiques, the sessions that help them to understand the value that you're bringing to the organization, the Ask Me Anything, AMA sessions, all go to build the teaminess, right? And the collaboration with each other. And to me, how I measure success is I want my team to understand the space that you're in, to ask for help and to receive help and to help each other. as they work together as a team of researchers and insights and analysts, right? The second is to also advocate for that space and that mental model with design and with the business at large. So if it's design all hands, you are asking for space for them in a world where more often than not, it's just one seat for design and that encapsulates design and research. For a research leader, it's really hard because you're like, okay, design is being represented. I don't need to also ask for research representation or design is being represented. So, you know, I just need to fit into the design agenda. I think that that partnership with design leaders is critical because when you're advocating and negotiating and showing what it means to get space and room for research, and that builds them up in terms of collaboration and also getting them to spew creativity. When it comes to day of learning or conferences, you have to be intentional to create specific research-oriented content for them to keep growing and to advocate for resources that cover that research craft. Research leaders also need to be intentional about thinking about what makes creativity happen in research. And for me, in the years that I've led Insights team, it's one, giving them the space to do work and getting them out of the hamster wheel of like, we do research, we send over the report, giving them space to spend time learning about business and business goals, giving them space and latitude to be part of the company culture, be part of ERGs, do all the things that foster a sense of like, belonging, and we are really in our space, and that spews over and they start to do things that are outside your niche. One thing that I've also noticed is that research problems, especially in the world of innovation and AI, are starting to be more complex than, you know, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, usability problems or website redesign or simple, relatively simple problems that we're seeing. Now you're dealing with like customer churn, which is really complex. You're dealing with going to new markets or transforming a company's offerings to like AI infused or AI focused ones. And so these problems don't really have one, a definition and a way to address it. And so for me, creativity is for the researchers and research teams to be empowered to think outside the box, to figure out how we can do short-term, medium-term, and then long-term research activities to get them to the answers or the information that helps businesses make the decisions that they want. The last thing that I'll say about really strategies for managing like a diverse set of folks on your team is really, one, I talked about fostering that inclusive environment, but that and then helping them go on a journey of continuous learning. The last thing that helps with is setting and aligning on common goals. And that's true for my teams where we have common goal across all the different titles on my teams, but also setting a common goal with design and product and company-wide goals. At least there should be a few goals everybody truly understands. When that happens, with the diversity of folks on the team and the diversity of skill set, we are marching towards a common goal that reduces half of the friction. And then you come down to, okay, with this common goal, how do we start to address it? If you're a quant researcher, if you're a qual researcher, if you're a tester, if you are a program manager, what is your role in helping us get to that common goal? And I think that is not really taught in schools or really taught in research leadership. And it took me a while to even learn how to do that. But when you set common goals, it really reduces the kind of territorial, you know, hustle and really helps everyone think about like what they can do to contribute to the common goal. And I advise research leaders to do that, not just for their research and insights team, but also think about that when they're dealing with design level goals or company-wide goals. And those strategies, I think, are very helpful in really thinking about diverse skill set on your teams.
Thank you so much, Claudia. So could you please walk us through your design making process for major UX research initiatives? And what strategies do you use to build and maintain high performing UX research teams?
My decision making process for research initiatives. So my research initiatives fall under three main buckets. I'll say 3.5. The first is initiatives that drive company-wide empathy. I think that is still a major win if research leaders are able to navigate the complexity in understanding of what customer empathy is and what do we do with customer insight. It's still fuzzy. There's product folks who want to talk to customers. There's CX teams that are talking to customers. There's sales teams that are talking to customers. But if you are a research leader and you intentionally or unintentionally, build programs or initiatives to get everybody together towards the company-wide empathy goal, or to have anybody in a company understand what it means and how they can contribute to customer empathy, it builds better products. It really helps with the culture. It reduces a ton of wastage or duplicates when it comes to efforts. So one of my big goals stems from that company-wide initiative for customer empathy. The second would be operations. Remember I talked about company-wide goals. Every company wants to reduce kind of convoluted processes. And if you're a research leader, one area that we are uniquely positioned to help is reduce frustration in setting up stuff and doing stuff and running research and finding where customers are and learning about our customers or listening to insights that have been. So if you're able to think about initiatives or programs, and for me, I think about like research ops, not in terms of like, what do you need? I can give it to you, but office hours, Slack channels, repositories, insights, and where do I share them so that folks have it on your fingertips when they need it? Those are initiatives that I like to also run. And then lastly, research initiative for products and, you know, the company strategic research. When I'm thinking through these initiatives, think clearly about folks that I have on my team right now. And I think about the resources that I have across the business. I'll explain that. I have learned along my journey, and I encourage research leaders to think about this, is to get all the help that they can in terms of like, who else passionate about customer insights, who is collecting it or using it or advocating for it? And then how do I get them to also share the resources they have in order to think about the collective resources we have? So the first is just getting the baseline understanding of like, what are my resources? Who are my helpers? What is really important now that can yield 2x, 3x, 4x return on investment? And then I think about my team. I think about the skill set that I have, the craft, but also the social skills. I think about who I need to hire. And one of my mentors told me a long time ago that I needed to operate as if I always have a headcount, and I need to operate as if I'm always going to lose someone on my team. And that helps you build the muscle of always thinking about who else you need, what skill set you need, what craft you need. So for me, when I'm thinking of my initiative, I'm thinking, okay, this is an opportunity to think about who can do what. But if I don't have anyone on my team to the initiative or think through the project, one, how can I get someone to do that? Or how can I train the existing folks to fit into that? And that's like just a way to start thinking about it. I also think about initiatives and the stakeholders that are part of it, because it's my job as a leader to foster that collaboration and to empower my teams to have the right folks in the room at all times. Because I talked about this earlier, I'm always reminded that the job of researchers and research leaders is not just to get to the research output. Our job is also to facilitate that next step and the action item. So I think about that. I build, you know, collaboration strategy. How do we initiate? How do we bring people together? And then once the initiative is underground, I also think about how do we get feedback? How do we evaluate what is good enough? Because we're pouring into it, we're pouring our time and our resources. So even if it's office hours, I want to measure, I want to think about metrics. I want to be able to justify the use of my teams. And then I want to be able to repeat great initiatives that happen. So I'm always thinking about metrics and evaluation and feedback, not as an afterthought. These are some of the pillars that I use in thinking about initiatives and thinking about programs and my teams and how we can get things done.
Thank you so much, Gloria. So what role does diversity and inclusion play in your UX research teams? And how do you ensure these principles are upheld?
That's a great question. I think about diversity and inclusion in two main buckets. The first is the people on my team and how that shows up. And then two, the work we do, how we do our research and bring customer insights into the company and how diversity and inclusion shows up. But first off, I want to bring my understanding. So When I think about diversity and inclusion, for me, and the way that I practice bringing that principle to life is diversity is actively seeking, welcoming, and encouraging diversity of like people, their thoughts, their skill set, their background, their experience, their ideas, right? Who is on my team and who else can I bring that's going to be an add on the team? And then when I think about inclusion, it means, you know, heavy on the welcoming and heavy on the understanding that I brought folks into my teams or brought them into the company or wherever I am for them to shine because it's something that you're bringing. And it's a journey. I wouldn't sit here and say that I have it 100% down, but let me spend some time on people. So the few steps that I have practiced over time that keeps me on that journey is one, just embracing that even when I start to think about an open role or as I'm hiring, where are the spaces that I have? And I remember about 5 years ago, there was this debate on like, do we get to, you know, to hire from industry versus folks with academic background. Now it's not really a debate. People don't really talk about that, but it used to be a heated conversation. And for me, I've done both because I have academic background and I have industry. And it's the understanding of like, we're going to seek in diverse spaces, whether it's folks from bootcamp, apprenticeship programs, industry, academic background, knowing the role that you want to fill and knowing the type of skill set that are going to help with building a great organization and inside the organization. And so for me, seeking them out, hiring, you know, them into roles, leveraging my understanding of, okay, I am bringing them in. I want to welcome them. I want them to flourish. What are opportunities for them to learn or complement what you're bringing and be part of the team that we are building? The second is, as I'm thinking about what is it that they need, I'm thinking of the environment that they sit in. Usually for a lot of research teams, including myself, when we start to think deeply about diversity and inclusion is because we have seen unbalanced teams and we are seeking it out. And it means really thinking about what completes your team in order for your team to build for a world where everybody is a user of your technology or product. So I remember one time I was hiring for my team and I realized that, you know, the typical ways of measuring diversity inclusion are just like gender or, you know, people of color trying to, you know, balance the traditional metrics for HR. And for me, I noticed that my team had predominantly females on the team. And I'm like, no, there's something to be learned from having a balance. And so for me, it was the opposite of what has traditionally been measured. And that's an example that sticks with me because it means that you're willing to do the work to get approvals, to get to balance your team in order to get all the different sets of perspective that our customers are looking to see if you're building for them. And so I use that example to show that you're creating the environment after you hire a diverse team, but they also provide equal opportunity. You acknowledge that you're bringing folks in to be part of your global research and insight team, but not everybody has that roundedness. So what are the opportunities that you can give for them to keep growing and developing and honing in on that headspace that they can bring the ideas that you're looking for? And then I mentioned the second bucket, which is how we do the research. For me, practicing research, and this is my academic background speaking, it should be repeatable, it should be valid, it should be done with proper hygiene. And so I think about just the step-by-step way of just conducting research and getting to findings and getting to insights and having that be used. And when I think about diversity and inclusion, I'm thinking about how we are getting our participants, how we are getting our users, the data sets that we are using, how we are recruiting, making sure that, you know, all these accessibility and equitable and ethical research practices come to play. Because other than that, your research practice and the way of doing research just affords a few people an opportunity to share their voice and learn from these, you know, participants or users. And so thinking about that hygiene as you're going through your research and setting up practices to make sure that you're not tapping into the same pool or setting your research practices up that only some people can be part of your quest for insights or quest for getting customers as part of your journey. And then I also think about accessibility principle. And this is not a just research effort. You're thinking about that with the process of doing research, but also in the products and services and offerings for your company. All of that lands into that inclusion part of it, which is like you cultivate empathy, understanding that not everybody has the lenses that you're coming with. You also cultivate an understanding that some of these things requires the nuance and the wisdom in navigating. Imagine you telling a company to open up the data sets or customer pool and have you target a specific group. It seems unfair, but it seems like you need to spread out your North Star in a language that, you know, your partners and executive understand. It means that when you're setting labs, folks to come in at night to run the studies, which they couldn't do in the daytime, and you give them that leeway, you are speaking up and you are navigating all of this with this cultural like nuance and sensitivity to it. So that's how I think about inclusion and diversity in the teams that are doing the work for the future of tech innovation, but also with the practices. How do you run your studies? How do you do the research? How do you think long term? How do you think about your participant? How do you think about the diversity of the things that you're doing to get the voices that traditionally have been ignored? And like I mentioned in the beginning, it's a journey, but I'm committed. I think the journey starts with commitment. It makes this question really, really dear to my heart, because it's that commitment and that intentionality in thinking about that in your practice as a research leader that gets you on that pathway to doing all of these things.
Thank you so much, Claudia. So what are some of the most valuable lessons you have learned as a leader in UX research?
Oh man, I have learned a lot. I've stumbled, I have jubilated, I have celebrated, I have learned, I have grown. And all that I'm going to say is because I have summarized all of this into what I take with me as wisdom. I have three key ones that always go with me. I even have it as a post-it here. The first is learning and building the muscle of conflict resolution. Research leaders, I can't tell you how many times I have been in situations where I have to manage and resolve conflict between another partner or stakeholder or executive leadership, or even between two functions. More often than not, you see engineering and product, or product and design, or design and engineering, just in a little, you know, conflict about resources and how to use it and how your team should support them. And conflict resolution is not a one-time thing. It's a muscle that we build. And so the lesson that I learned is to keep learning how to do it well, and to keep learning how to use my EQ to learn people, read people, and be the one to be kind of like kind of the leveling factor or the, you know, the Switzerland in all of this, and really help navigate, resolve conflict for myself, but also for situations that happen. The second is, I think I mentioned this, always keep hiring. I think we always assume that we're not going to have headcount, or when we have headcount, it's going to be filled up. There's always going to be, but when I talk about always keep hiring, it's my practice of meeting new people, getting in spaces, learning, you know, researchers and the different crafts and skills that people bring, to always know who has what skill and who has what talent, or who has the need to be an add-on to my teams. And the reason is that if you're not conscious and you don't think in your head that you're always hiring, you get an open head count and it takes so long to fill, you know, you don't really think deeply about the job description, and you don't think deeply about the resources you need to build and grow this person that joins a team, and everything is an afterthought. And so your researchers come in and it's not what they thought, or they come in and it's just like the best you could find because you're so stressed with time and constraint. So I want research leaders to keep thinking about the fact that like you're always going to hire and you're always going to need someone. And so get in the spaces, talk to people, read articles, learn more about what is needed, what craft and skill set that, you know, your business will need. And sometimes propose it to the company before they start to realize that we need an analyst or a researcher or insights person. Then lastly, most things take time. As a researcher who has become a research leader, I cannot tell you how many times I am just like in awe of like the different nuances and factors that are happening across the company that makes things really slow. And if you've practiced research for a long time, it's just like you get the problem, you get what you want to do, the research, you go do the research. Or if you have a team which is smaller or nimble, like, you know what to do, you go get them to do. But as you're scaling yourself as a research leader, you start to learn more of the business, about other functions, other goals from different functions. You learn about design, you have empathy for your stakeholders. You start to realize that it's not as clean cut as it should be. And that understanding helps you slow down, build to scale, do a lot more systems thinking, and also be okay if a lot of what you're doing seems like it's just planting the seeds. Like, you haven't seen the shoots, you haven't seen the tree, you have definitely not seen the fruits. And so you are in this period where you're like, I can see the value. Like, you know, I can write about my value, my impact. Some things take time. And for me, these are the three things that I take in my back pocket wherever I go, and I tell people about it too.
Thank you so much, Gloria, for sharing such wonderful lessons. So how do you balance business objectives with user needs in your research strategies?
So you're right. This is a catch-22. Like, business exists because they have a problem for the customer that they want to solve. But then sometimes the business goals and the business purpose is in direct conflict with customers' needs and what customers want. For me, I talk a lot, and I've mentioned several times about learning more about business goals and why business exists. But I also share a lot about leading research teams and bringing insights that the companies don't, businesses don't even know that they need to hear, and helping them navigate the next steps. So how I balance is, one, getting a good understanding of what will crush the business. And what I mean by that is, get a good understanding of the metrics, you know, ARR, revenue, sales, like how businesses do well and how businesses shrink or don't do well. Because the bottom of the bottom lines is the business doesn't do well to the point that the business closes down. You don't want that to happen. That's an exaggeration. But you really want to understand, and I do that. I understand the business goals and the metrics and what we're measuring and how we're doing well in order to be a realist. So as I'm thinking about my user needs or, you know, customer strategy or research strategies, I understand what I'm working with. I put on my executive hat and I'm like, okay, these are the resources that we realistically have. These are the things that we realistically can produce for our customers. It helps me be a better executive because I'm able to say, these are things that the customer needs, or these are strategies that are going to help the customer that can fit our three-month period. In 6 months, we will be in a better position to do these for our customers. And in 12 months, we'll be in a better position to go the extra mile, which means I'm navigating back and forth. As I'm running these research objective, I'm thinking about my strategy for research. I'm doing all these like short-term, mid-term, longitudinal research thinking, but I'm also bringing back and helping my stakeholders navigate what is realistic, what can be done with enough time, and what is like forward-looking. So I think that the balance is not a one-time thing. It's a continuation of the conversation that used to be the continuation of a previous conversation, where as you go in and set up these customer research strategies, you know what you are working with. You know the business you're in for. You know the vision for the business too and where we want to get to. And then the conversation is, okay, we have all these insights. We have the strategy. We have to break it down into, realistically speaking, you know, with a little push and then forward looking. And that's how I toggle back and forth to think about both. And like I mentioned, some things take time. Sometimes we tend to index a lot on like customer strategy, what the customer need, and forget about the business goals. Sometimes too, the business tend to not think about what we can really do. And that was when you come to cheerleader and say, hey, if we can just fix this thing for the customer and forgo other things that we want to do, this will in turn take us to this place that we want to get to. And I think that the key is balance. Yeah, we always balance those things. Yep.
Thank you so much, Gloria. So where do you see the field of UX research heading in the upcoming years with the rise of AI? And what should upcoming UX researchers should focus on developing?
Let me tell you a funny conversation that I had with my fellow, you know, research leaders and researchers. There's this conversation about AI, which happens all the time now. And someone was talking about how AI is going to replace researchers. And to be frank, there are articles that have come out about that. And for me, I always like squirm a little bit because I don't think AI will replace researchers. I think what's truly going to replace researchers are designers that do research and use AI. And everybody chuckled, but that's the truth. A lot of companies and businesses I see now are trying to just like find a designer who can do a little bit of engineering. Find that designer who can do a little bit of research. Find that product person who can do a little bit of design. Everybody's trying to do the most out of their resources. And that is to say that like researchers should not worry about AI in terms of like it replacing. I think most of our energy should go into using AI well to do the things that we can do better. And then also building a relationship we have with Quest Functional stakeholders. To that point, there are a few things that I think AI can really help UX research with. I think that the sheer distillation of big data, you know, the synthesis of all the things that we are learning, helping us really go back to finding that exact quote or finding that exact recording or finding that exact, helping us catalog, you know, it reduces the tardiness. It helps us be well positioned. I think it augments our human components of doing research. And I think that the second thing that I'm really happy about AI is the infusion of AI powered research tools. It also augments our practices. Scheduling, calendaring, running the study, thinking about the questions. It reduces the time that we use on redundant stuff to really focus on the time that we can really think creatively and strategically about the stuff that we do. And then a lot of research happens with conversation or observation or triangulating of data. And I think that AI can help us find patterns that we have missed or patterns that are beyond what we could because of like, you know, a human nature. And then lastly, what I am passionate about, I talked about my research process and bringing diversity and inclusion, is the ethical consideration. My passion is to build technology for all and to make sure that voices are represented in building, you know, future like AI and innovation. So if AI can remind us of the things that we are missing. And I know that's a catch-22 because we're training these models and how can they remind us? But if we're able to really think deeply about augmenting the practice to say, hey, is there a privacy protection somewhere that you're missing? Is there a voice that you should probably reach out to because of your constraints and your resources? This is the best way to run this thing. I can help you with scheduling and calendaring so that your program managers can focus on other operations and other things that can help in other parts. Like these are some of the things that I love to see AI help us do, help us be better, sharper, effective. For research leadership, for me, like AI helps me a lot with the, you know, ChatGPT to really learn more about functions or situations that you don't have access to. Because AI is synthesizing all of these things. So when I put in things like, you know, leadership skills or craft or design process, like some of these things, it really makes you spend less time on trying to investigate and find it out. So I'm excited not just for the technology itself and the things that we can build, but I'm excited for it to just help us be better, faster, effective researchers and help us deliver more with the already scarce resources that we have. And I think that it will take us researchers to be part of the building of AI in order for it to also work for us. And I'm looking forward to how we involve with like getting the right training set, testing it, and getting it to work. But yes, researchers should not sit behind or sit on the sidelines. There's so much in store for us, including research leaders too. So
thank you so much, Claudia, for sharing all these wonderful insights with us. So could you please share with us, how does your typical day look like? And how do you continue to learn and grow as a leader in UX research?
Yes, so I don't have a typical day, and I think you've heard that from a lot of people, but I can tell you some of the things that I intentionally put on my calendar for the day. So in the morning, I spend an hour like learning and growing myself, which means I've subscribed to Google Alerts, I've subscribed to articles, I have subscribed to podcasts, just like learning more about leadership itself, research craft and where it's going, and business acumen. So I spend about an hour just like catching up, learning, upgrading myself. And then I also spend some time, about an hour, really thinking about the vision and the North Star that I have and that strategy breaking down into execution. So I look at our North Star and the goals that we have and then think about all the different strategy and execution that we have and see if it's working. And that's where I talk about like, you know, putting out the fires or making sure that things are constantly moving. I spend some time doing that. And then throughout the week, you find me, you know, set up meetings with, you know, all of the staff, but I also dedicate time to like one-on-ones and building trusting relationships with my stakeholders. So it's like catch up, or syncs or attending cross-functional or hands or team meetings. I spend time doing some of these meetings. And then what else? I also review. It'll surprise you, but I also review work that has been done so that I can give tailored direct feedback to teams on what is needed. And I'm also caught up with what's happening so I can amplify that across the business. And then I definitely have time for myself towards the end of the day to really go back to thinking about triangulation. So is there something on marketing or sales or CX or design that we're learning, and what does that mean? And I think for me, I think part of my job and what I really encourage my teams to do is like to be the person to pull out those signals from the noise of everything that is happening with insights and share it. People don't have time. People don't have a lot of energy to be doing those things. And so as I'm sifting and thinking about why this matters, like if there's a marketing issue happening and we have some insights, connecting the dots for my teams and also for the business, I spend some time towards the end of the day trying to do those things and surfacing it. So yeah, and then, you know, in the course of a month, I think about building and growing my team and performance management and growth opportunities. And that is like how I run a typical day and then move on to the next day.
Thank you so much, Gloria, for sharing all these wonderful insights with us. So we'll conclude the show by your three favorite book recommendations and people who inspire you the most in this space.
Yeah, I love this question. So my favorite books, quickly, one, Simon Sinek's Leaders Eat Less. That is a book that teaches you how to build teams and build effective teams that come together versus teams that fall apart. And that book is my favorite because it gives you practical steps on like building a team. Research leaders in design, and a lot of researchers feel lonely. Research leaders feel lonely. The number one need for researchers today is, you know, being part of a community or a team that feels like they're sticking together and they're addressing a goal. So that really taught me how to lead an effective team that stays together. The second is Life is in Transition. It's by Bruce Feiler. And it talks about the ups and downs in a way that really opens your eyes to really think about that executive stamina that research leaders have to build. For me, I have realized that I need to build that executive stamina in the ups and downs. So Life is in the Transition. This is a book that people, if you're interested, check it out. And then lastly, Dare to Lead by Brené Brown. It's a popular one. It's a favorite for me. It taught me what it takes to have the courage and the responsibility to develop people. If you are a research leader, you are responsible to lead people, but also to develop them. And for me, I've made it a point to really build all the muscle that I need and the knowledge that I need to take that courage to lead people and to build them up. So Brené's book, Dare to Lead, is my third favorite. And the people that inspire me, my parents, they taught me what it means to think and have a worldview of what I am doing and how it affects other people. So it gives me that worldwide perspective of like, how is this technology affecting people in India, in Australia, in Europe? And then Catherine Kamelin, she's a research leader at Google. She used to be my manager, and she taught me what it means to have the courage to lead research teams and to negotiate and to advocate and to think bigger and better and to think beyond design research. And then lastly, Michelle Gensley, she's now the Chief Data and Insights Officer for McDonald's. She was the one that taught me how to take initiative. Companies wouldn't have a job rec that says, we want someone who can help us with our data and our customer insights and research. And she went on a journey of like understanding that this is a problem and building a role for herself and building the space that she needs to do that job, even though she never had that title. And so for research leaders, I encourage you to seize the opportunity, go beyond just design research, think about end-to-end customer journey. And even if you don't have the title for it, do the work, and I promise you it's rewarding. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Gloria, for those wonderful recommendations, and thank you so much for your time. We are looking forward to host you again in our upcoming episodes.
Thank you, Tej. It was wonderful being on the show.